This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 120.
And it was the first time I had understood you have to meet the business where it is. You need to spend time really focused in on understanding where you can execute and within what context. Because a lot of people, especially if they've been someplace with an academy background, they will think about how do I go design and build what I know? Usually that's a mistake. The question is, what can you execute given where they are, and how do you stretch that over time? And if you do that, you always want to stretch, but that allows you to understand what you need to do to enable better execution, and it changes the work. It puts first things first.
Why do HR leaders need to be talent mavens, employee advocates, and company defenders? How can you shift from a cost mindset to a return on investment mindset? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Since I've doubled down on my mission to develop the next generation of HR leaders, I've been asked to be a keynote speaker for 7 different internal HR conferences or career weeks of Fortune 500 companies. This has been a big honor and a blast. What am I speaking on? Well, I'm leveraging my 100-plus interviews on the podcast and my 20-plus year career as a talent and HR executive to talk about 3 things. 1, how HR leaders can have more influence and impact in what I call the influence equation. 2, how to future-proof your HR career in the age of AI. And 3, the future trends impacting our field. I love speaking to HR teams, and I'm extremely grateful for the opportunities that I've had to date. If you're looking for a speaker for your 2025 HR conferences, career weeks, or other meetings, I'd love to hear from you and talk. My guest this week is Jackson Lynch. Jackson is the Executive Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer at Sunnova. Sunnova is an industry-leading adaptive energy services company focused on making clean energy more accessible, reliable, and affordable for homeowners and businesses. Over his career, Jackson has served as a CHRO at multiple public and private companies, including RentPath, Blue Line Rental, and Clearwater Paper Corporation. Jackson has also run his own consulting firm, 90 Consulting, where he's advised board of directors and senior management on issues related to executive compensation, organizational design, and M&A integration. And in Jackson's spare time, he started Talent Sherpa, which is a newsletter for HR and business leaders that offers expert insights and strategies in human capital management. And Talent Sherpa has grown to be very popular with over 4,000 subscribers. I highly recommend you check it out, as I've been a subscriber for some time. And if you want to subscribe to Talent Sherpa, which of course I recommend you do, you can find the link in the show notes, or you can go to talentsherpa.substack.com. I really enjoyed my conversation with Jackson, and I know you will too, as we discussed why you need to meet the business where it is, not where you wish it would be, why CHROs and CEOs need to be aligned on what good looks like for an effective partnership, the 3 essential hats HR leaders must wear: talent maven, employee advocate, and company defender, the role of business acumen in enabling HR leaders to create outcomes and shape future work strategies, and why HR leaders need to shift from a cost to a return on investment mindset, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn or say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Jackson. Jackson, welcome to the Future of HR Podcast. How are you?
I'm living the dream, brother, and I'm so excited about being here and getting to talk with your listeners and learn a little bit together.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you in the podcast as well. We're talking about this, but how we got to know each other was I actually found your great newsletter, The Talent Sherpa, And then I realized, I'm like, wait, there's actually a CHRO behind this newsletter. And then the stranger part is that we both went to the same undergraduate school, Western Washington University, which not that many people go to and then move out of Washington. So we're both in Texas, actually. So a lot of coincidences. But more importantly, let's talk about your career. Like many HR leaders, you didn't start your career thinking you're going to go into HR, but yet you're here. So tell us about how you got your start and what led to a career in HR.
And it's crazy. We both were in student government there and played in radio before. And so now we're sitting here on a podcast 30 years later. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, it's interesting. My background, I never thought I was going to be an HR professional or play in human capital. I grew up on a factory floor in my dad's company. My grandpa started it in 1937, furniture and lumping trucks. We ended up spending an enormous amount of time on the factory floor, working with folks, building furniture. And that really helped me understand what that frontline employee experience was like. Then I got a degree in accounting. I thought that was important to learn the language of business. I think it served me well as we moved forward. And then my first real job was an engineer for Boeing. I played both in industrial engineering, and in that you did a lot of project management work and kind of skills and talent forecasting. And then I moved into a frontline third shift maintenance engineering manager, something I was not skilled at or talented or accredited with. And I ran a red label engineering, which basically it was when you build an airplane, you put parts on, but they might not be flight spec. So before you have the bird lift off, you have to go in and take all the stuff out that shouldn't be in a bird in the sky and replace it with stuff that you do. And that's an enormous amount of engineering work. And I learned how to assess the context of asking and directing work, which again, I think has been helpful. And while I was there, we laid off about 30,000 people in about 30 months. When we finally rolled out the 777 program, I worked both on that and the B2 stealth program for a bit. But when we rolled out the 777, I was struck by the duality of there was not a dry eye in the house when you rolled the bird out for the first time. And that Dick Clark Productions probably had something to do with that. But the same people who were crying and had the pride in the product were saving money to go out and strike. So how is it that you can create a culture that is so purpose-driven with internal strife? And that's where I started thinking about, is there a better way? So ultimately, I made the switch through coming out of graduate school because I realized I really enjoyed helping people to succeed. I really liked building things. And ultimately, there's only one way to create a sustainable competitive advantage, and that's human capital. And human capital with applied engineering and math, I didn't think there were a lot of people who were doing that. I might be an average engineer, but I might be a slightly above average human capital practitioner. So that's it. That's how we did it.
That's a great story. And I think having an engineering background and accounting background is actually really, really helpful because as an engineer, you learn how to break down problems and think really critically. Obviously, accounting is the language of business. So combining both of those really gives you a leg up, frankly, on other HR folks. And then you went to grad school. What did you get your graduate degree in?
Yeah, it's a Master of Business Administration from the University of Notre Dame. It was in finance and operations. So again, I think I've taken one HR course in my life. So don't tell my boss.
Okay, we won't tell your boss. And so that then allowed you to pivot. So you came out of graduate school and said, hey, I think I want to do, even though I got a degree in finance, I want to spend my time on human capital and the people side of things and just apply that. That's awesome. Thinking back over your career, what roles or role really helped you to prepare to be a CHRO? Are there one or two that just really stood out for you?
Probably the one that had the second biggest impact was when I was an HR director with Frito-Lay. And we had about an eight-state, $800 million business. And the HR business partner in that world really had to understand the business cold. We spent a lot of time in sales compensation, and you had to understand how everything operated and how to use math as a direction finder in where you needed to be spending your time. I was talking to a colleague of mine earlier this week and told the story of I was flying with my family over to Ireland, and I flew from Seattle to Chicago, and I was looking at some data, and I called the head of one of our zones and said, we got a problem in 7-Eleven in this geography. He said, well, how do you know? I said, I was reviewing everybody's compensation, and there seems to be a problem. And he said, okay, I'll look into it. And by the time I landed in Dublin, we had been kicked out of all of the 7-Elevens in his market. By getting that close to the business and understanding good day, bad day, and thinking about how do you create systems that drive the behaviors you want at place where you had almost no supervision. Managing in four walls, easy. But what is it about a sales organization? It's Friday at 4:30. I put in 50 hours a week. I'm ready to go home. And I have a choice to make, spend more time with my family or build the display. And if I can get everyone in the company to build the display, I am growing year on year at 5%. So how do you manage through systems to that 5 o'clock decision? Whether it was in the paper industry or in the tech space, or I'm in the renewable energy space now, that lesson has paid great dividends moving forward.
That's a great story. And Frito-Lay was part of PepsiCo, I'm sure, at the time. So a great HR organization, very business focused.
It really was. But it also taught me some things I needed to unlearn. And that was probably the most important job I had, was my first public company. 12 years ago, CHRO, I thought I knew everything I needed to know. And I stepped in there and I stubbed my toe for the first time in my career. And I stubbed it because at Frito, I worked for Nestle DSD, but we were working with a bunch of Frito people in there. So it was like the same culture, just different logo. I thought I knew what alignment meant. And what alignment meant in the Frito day was, it's a good idea. It's profit accretive. You have the right sponsorship behind the idea. Alignment is on how you do it. So I got to Clearwater and I had a really good idea and I got my boss on board with it. So I start working with alignment and it was like, this guy's moving fast. And it was the first time I understood you have to meet the business where it is. You need to spend time really focused in on understanding where you can execute and within what context. Because a lot of people, especially if they've been someplace with an academy background, they will think about how do I go design and build what I know? Usually that's a mistake. The question is, what can you execute given where they are, and how do you stretch that over time? And if you do that, you can actually move the organization farther faster than if you do what I did, which was I just assumed everyone was like PepsiCo. To my performance, didn't turn out to be true.
Well, it sounds like you learned that lesson. And I love the way you say it. You stubbed your toe, because it's going to happen. But more importantly, meeting your business, the organization where they're at, is really critical, right? Because we can design the best talent programs, compensation programs, et cetera. But if they aren't what people are going to execute, then really, what's it for? I'm always about pick a model. Whatever you have today, if it's working and people are executing and adopting it and driving it, that's great, versus trying to create the brand new that we think is so sexy and interesting, but people aren't really going to adopt it or use it, then you know, you really lose that power.
Yeah, I've actually been working with my organizational employee performance group and my current employer recently on that very topic, because we don't have an organizational development function. Probably become evident as to why. But historically, most folks try to design for brilliance and hope for the best for execution. And at some point, that just slows you down. You have to meet the business where they are. And if you do that, you always want to stretch, but that allows you to understand what you need to do to enable better execution. And it changes the work and it puts first things first.
That's well said. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Talent Sherpa, which is your weekly newsletter that you really created for not just HR leaders, but senior business leaders. And I think it's written, you know, that I think senior HR leaders or next gen HR leaders will appreciate it, but also business leaders can appreciate the topics and the way you write. But what made you decide to write Talent Sherpa and put that effort in that it takes to write a great newsletter?
Well, JP, for me, it's a matter of how do I give back to the organizations that I've been a part of while I've decided to go back inside a company, which kind of limits my reach. I worked for and started a consulting firm for about 10 years. We worked with companies that were going through leadership transitions or ownership transitions. We really helped the organization look at their business strategy through a talent lens and identify what was most important. And what we tried to do is help smartly separate that which needed to be done now from what could be improved later, then ultimately leave the roadmap for folks to go follow. And through that experience, what I learned was, especially in the SMB market, you had really well-intentioned human capital practitioners who probably didn't have the academy HR training. But the other thing I learned is you have a lot of CEOs who have no idea how to manage and effectively utilize human capital. When I decided to go back inside an organization for a handful of personal reasons, what I wanted to do is continue to share those learnings, because I think there are a lot of really good people out there, probably don't take anything from everything I write, but occasionally maybe they'll take something that will be helpful for them and how they manage it. As it turns out, it's moved into a different space, though. It's actually helped me be a better CHRO, because when I think about stuff, I tend to write about it. It crystallizes things in my thinking and allows me to kind of share things with people that I work with. My head HR business partner said, sometimes I think you're writing this to me. And I'm like, yeah, I am. And sometimes my CEO says, hey, I think I understand what you're trying to communicate there. Wasn't that the problem that we were talking about? And I'm like, yeah. I went home and I thought about it and I wrote about it. And sometimes I'll actually even send it to him and say, hey, I've thought about this. Let's talk about it. He's great because he'll actually read it and tell me where he thinks I might be onto something, and equally important, tell me where, you know, he doesn't think I've thought about it in the right way. And those are just conversations without doing the newsletter I would never have. So hopefully it helps others, but it certainly helps me.
Let's talk a little bit more about a couple things that you've written about, because I've, you know, looked through and have been a subscriber for a while. You had an article where you talked about why new CEOs should evaluate the HR alignment to the business. So as a new CEO comes in the organization, you're saying, hey, you should evaluate how is HR aligned to the business. Why is that important, and what should they be evaluating, Jackson?
I think it's important first to make sure you have clarity on expectations. What is it that you expect out of the HR community? That should sound like a no kidding. Everybody does that. But as I stepped into my consulting firm, what I realized, and then I tested and proved it out, is there is great alignment between what a CEO expects out of the CFO. There is great understanding of what a CFO is expected to know to be successful as a CFO. And largely, it's consistent across companies, industries, and the like. The only major difference is the degree you have investor relations, if it's public or private equity. None of that's true on the human capital side. For one thing, I can't even tell you what the right title is. It might be one of six or seven titles. Second, you have a strong sense of what HR does. And the CEO's experience might be completely different. And it's one of the reasons why the research would suggest when you have a change in CEO, the first person that might be looking in a different direction is the CHRO. And oftentimes, not because they're not good at what they do, but because they're not aligned with the expectations that that the new CEO brings to it from their previous experience. So I think really starting there is super important.
What advice or tips do you have for HR leaders to get more aligned in expectations with their CEOs?
I think you have to ask questions and drive the conversations around those. So one of the questions I would ask is, what are the current gaps in our talent capabilities and how are we addressing them? It's about identifying skills and competencies that are lacking in the organization. It's about being very proactive in addressing those talent gaps. And it all comes back to what we add the most value in, which is to predict outcomes, identify root causes, and prescribe actions. If you aren't aligned on what the capabilities are that you need and where you are, then you have a hard time influencing the human capital elements that enable the business plan. One of the questions I would ask is that current gap and where we are and what we're going to do to address it. I think a second one is around the effectiveness of HR technologies and processes. And that becomes helpful because at some point, that technology is not a cost, it's an enabler. And you have to be able to make the return on investment argument, not a cost argument. And if you're aligned on what the role of HR technology is and how it gets used with a CEO, every other conversation gets a lot easier. But if you're making a return on investment argument and they only see it as a cost argument and you're the head of HR, you have some work to do. And maybe you're in the wrong place. And maybe you're the wrong person for the CEO. if you're not aligned on the use of technology. It's the single biggest spend outside of external search in most HR functions. And I think the last one is the most important. Are the CEO and CHRO aligned on what good looks like? If there's not a shared understanding of what good looks like, then you have to figure out how to make sure that those initiatives are, that's done, or else you don't have the shared understanding of how the initiatives play into the bigger strategy. An old colleague of mine, John Boudreau, for the USC Center for Effective Organizations, once told me, you can tell where you have HR that is doing progressive HR work before you join them. All you have to do is look to see if you're going to do HR work, I should say. All you have to do is look to see if they've already been doing the HR work, because it's really hard to teach organizations, no matter how great you think you are. I think those are the three questions that I would ask as I step.
Really good advice. Interesting. And I think, to your point, getting clear on what good looks like is interesting too. And I guess from your perspective, is that really with the CEO saying what good looks like in terms of performance, HR, the organization, you know, because it can go a lot of different ways. How do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a combination of the metrics, the priorities, the direction, the what role you want to have them play at senior levels. It's a, to what degree do you want me to tell you the things you need to hear that no one's willing to tell you? How ready are you to hear those things? And that's where I candidly think first-time CHROs struggle a little bit, because they don't, I know I certainly didn't feel comfortable in leaning into the discomfort that says, I'm going to tell someone something that they don't want to hear, and I'm doing it because ultimately I'll go execute the initiative as they're asking me to, but they need to make that decision with eyes wide open, and building the skills to be able to do that effectively takes time and it takes practice. It's an interesting question of how do you align with the CEO? And it all starts with the business strategy. And let's look at it through a talent lens. And what you know about the talent to enable that business strategy can be sussed out with a series of questions. Ultimately, your job is to predict outcomes based upon your assessment of it, to identify root causes, and to predict outcomes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And speaking about human capital decisions, you had this one article that really just resonated with me, because you talked about HR wearing three distinct yet interrelated hats that would ensure organizational success. And that's the talent maven, the employee advocate, and the company defender. I thought they were just kind of brilliant, but tell us more about these three hats and why that's critical for decision making.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite ones to write, to be candid, because I've had those thoughts bouncing around in my head for years and years and years. That allowed me to crystallize the thinking. So the three hats are you have the talent maven, and that's the person that is accountable for making sure you have the right person in the right seat at the right place with the right motivations and rewards and ability to be successful. You have the employee advocate, and that is in the spirit of Dave Ulrich's HR champion model. It's the person who is making sure that the employees are treated in a way that is fair. That's not always advocate when they shouldn't be advocated for. It is making sure that you have a good, clean, fair process in whatever you're trying to do, and that you have the right engagement level. And the company defender is the one that you hear about. What do we need to do to stay out of jail? How do we make sure that we are not taking unnecessary, not all risks should be eliminated, but unnecessary risks eliminated? In the course of my career, I found the best human capital decisions are a combination of those three hats, and you have to look at them separately. I've seen HR folks that want to be the employee advocate at the expense of the other two. Those are the folks that you see that make really unhelpful and unsupported arguments about why we should take a decision, because it's only one through one lens, and usually one that is HR helping the employee at the expense of what if they're in the wrong job, and then how do we mitigate risks? At the same time, I've seen HR folks, usually earlier in careers and in less progressive organizations, all their job is to keep us out of jail. Well, if you do those things, you might hit minimum expectations, but you're probably not enabling the business. That being said, the talent maven, if you do that without thinking about the employee advocate and the company defender, you'll find yourself in an unbalanced way there as well, and probably fighting some fires that it turns out you might have been the arsonist with. by looking at it through all three, you tend to get to the right answer faster and you do the right balancing. I think it's helped me and it's helped that's something I've tried to teach the folks that I've been able to support in my organizations over the years.
Yeah, it's a great mental model. And I think a lot of HR leaders will be thinking about the talent maven, the employee advocate, and the company defender to get that balance right going forward, Jackson. So thanks for sharing that. You've also talked about and have a belief that the right HR business partner can really change how HR operates or is perceived by the business. And really one important skill for you is that business acumen. And so tell us more about how do you define business acumen and how do you really help develop that in next generation HR leaders?
Yeah, you have got to know the business, Cole. That was the foundation of the PepsiCo HR model back in the John Ewing days. One that got reinforced by the kind of projects and work we asked our early career and mid-level career HR folks to do all the time. So the first step to having acumen is you need to understand how the business operates. The second part is you need to step back and look at the organization and how it operates through a talent lens and then predict outcomes. Sometimes that prediction is, hey, it's going to work exactly the way you want. Sometimes it's, oh my gosh, we've underthought this and we need to do something. From my consulting days, I had a client I stepped into. He had an interesting objective. As part of the thesis for buying the company, they wanted to have a growth engine of about 30% year-on-year CAGR for the next 3 years. That was great. So I looked at their existing sales performance, and what I found was this. 45% of their sales folks don't make it to year two. Of those that make it to year two, 95% of those folks never hit 30% CAGR. And so in order for them to be able to hit their numbers, they in fact need the folks that stay with them over that time period to be growing at 50% year on year. And that was completely unachievable without doing things differently. That understanding of looking at the business strategy through a talent lens, and we're able to predict outcomes. Hey, you're going to miss your plan. The root cause is you don't have a strong enough sales team and you have significantly higher attrition than you should in this role. You probably have a compensation strategy that, in this case, two different compensation strategies that worked against what you were trying to accomplish. They were more care and feeding plans than hunting plans. You're going to miss your numbers. So here's what you do about that. And then you come up with a list. How do you get access to that? It's all about the projects that you're put on and the expectations that your HR leadership has on what your role is. I've seen plenty of HR folks that have been given assignments as part of a broader change and transition that take on an administrative role to it. I've seen better folks that take on a change management role to it. I think we have a unique opportunity to take on a shaping role, but you got to do that with two things: business acumen, and then your ability to influence it based on that acumen.
It's a great example too, because you have to know the business well enough in that sales example to understand the fact that you are going to put those numbers with the existing sales force, right? So the entire business strategy or the goals you had was flawed. And that does happen sometimes because business leaders set ambitious goals. They're like, okay, now HR, go figure this out. Well, in that case, you're like, we'd love to help you figure it out, but we've got root caused it. And it's a little broader than just us hiring more salespeople. So great example, Jackson, on that. Let's talk a little more about the future of work. We've talked about that a lot in the podcast, and a lot of us think about that a lot. But you've talked about the organization needs to be more agile. It's critical for organizations and CHROs to continue to build this capability. What does it really mean? So from your perspective, what does it look like to build organizational agility personally and as a function?
So HR agility is all around encompassing proactive, forward-looking strategies that are really designed to prime organizations for never-ending, incessant transformation. There's a lot of things we can learn, I think, from the technology space and how we apply it to HR world. Back to earlier in our conversation, we were talking about writing versus using PowerPoints. Like, one of the things the tech world does, and I think Amazon was one of the leaders in it. I don't know if they were the first, but they were certainly one of the more well-knowns, is they forced people to write down the business case for anything that they were going to talk about in the meeting. And you had to do it in less than a couple pages. And you didn't get to stand in front of the room and spend the first 15 slides, so 25 of the first 30 minutes, creating the understanding. They focused in on write it, be pithy, make sure you have everything you need covered from a background perspective, lay out the options, lay out the recommendations, lay out the why. And they start their meeting with 5 to 10 minutes where everyone sits there in silence and reads the thing. And then the next 20 minutes, you're debating the right approach to go forward, not trying to circle around what the problem really is. So I think it's an example from a human capital perspective on how do you balance securing a competitive advantage while trying to adeptly manage the demands of relentless adaptation requirements. Anyone that questions whether that's a human capital initiative, I give you what we had to do in the COVID days, where all of us became, I think you talked about this on a previous podcast, we developed a rapid expertise in things we had never even thought of before. How do you do that? I think the second piece, not to belabor the point, but it's about how do you focus on cultivating a resilient workforce, which is not only the people doing the work, but also how you lead that work. That's about fortifying resilience and merit and belonging, while at the same time recognizing that having a robust and diverse employee base is indispensable for rapid adaptation and innovation. And then finally, and HR folks generally don't do a great job of this, how do we measure the impact? And how do we have database decisions that allow us to then navigate the challenges that we will come up with in all of this? Because it is not, you know, see ball, hit ball. You have to see it, taking the baseball analogy. Our job is to help people read the pitch so the hitters know what they're going to be swinging at. We've got to help them understand early on, what is the rotation of the ball coming in? What is the speed of the ball coming in? And if we focus ourselves on building that kind of agility in, it kind of doesn't matter what pitch comes at you. You're going to put the barrel of the bat on it. Unless you're a Seattle Mariner fan, at which point you'll see nothing because we have no ability to hit this year whatsoever.
That's a great analogy. And I think as you talked about agility, the first piece of being agile is actually knowing where you want to go. Right. And then having that focus and that pivot, and then having that organization, the team members that are resilient and willing to move and shift with you. Because I think one of the challenges is that people don't always know where they're going. And because we don't communicate clearly, then it goes from agility sort of to chaos or confusion. And so that's really key. And I think that's one reason why Amazon's been so successful and how they manage things.
And on top of that, though, if you don't know what you're doing, how the heck do you quantify the return on investment? And if you can't quantify the return on investment, you are doomed to be playing a cost game in a budget environment. Where I would argue, if you can get the right ROI, because this space is so underserved historically, just let me go against any sort of machinery or new technology from an ROI standpoint. I'll win every single battle I go into. Keep me in the cost game. I'll lose more than I win. It's imperative for us to even, how do we navigate a scarce and limited resource environment once a year, every October? It's about how do you adapt the agility and measure it in a way that allows you to compete for access to precious resources. That's how you win.
That's really well said. And we may have to have you back to talk through ROI. I think that's another area we need a masterclass on. But Jackson, last question for you. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, we kind of dabbled on that a little bit. And for me, it's moving from a cost model to a return on investment mindset. And again, if we don't have the ability to effectively link what we do to the business outcome, or in an earlier podcast, I think Ulrich was talking about, so that if we don't have the ability to do that well, we're going to lose every access to resources that we need to be successful. However, if we can figure out a way to go do that, and we adapt an agile mindset, and we know the business cold, and we apply a talent lens to the business strategy, predict outcomes, identify root causes, and prescribe actions, and we do so in a way that leverages the business acumen and our ability to influence the business, we have the ability to make as big an impact in the next 10 years as finance did in the back half of the last century. I'm here for it.
Me too. I'm here for it as well. Jackson, this is a great conversation. Your newsletter is the Talent Sherpa. Of course, that'll be in the show notes. Everyone should subscribe. And thank you for being on the Future of HR podcast.
JP, it's a pleasure and really appreciate what you're doing for the community. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Jackson for sharing his insights on how to develop your business acumen and be a talent Sherpa. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe, share a podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with our Best of 2024 episode. This is my once-a-year episode where I have the difficult and next-to-impossible job of selecting the best and most insightful moments of a year's worth of interviews. You won't want to miss this fun and insightful episode. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.